One is about emergence for symmetry in 2+1 dimensional model, and the other is about non-forming liquid state. I will talk more about what they are, but both of them are concerned about understanding strong coupling physics in quantum field theories that can arise in condensed matter systems. And the first part is about a quantum field theory that describes a phase transition in a 2+1 dimensional lattice model. And although there is no supersymmetry in the microscopic model, at the critical point, supersymmetry dynamically emerges so that we can understand strong coupling physics quantitatively, like we can estimate, or we can predict what the critical exponents are, even at the strong fixed point. And in the second example, it's about non-relativistic quantum field theory of strongly inflicting many body formulas at a finite density. So let's start by discussing what emergent symmetry is. So emergent symmetry or accidental symmetry is a symmetry that is absent in the microscopic model, but emerges in the low energy limit. So it's not a symmetry of the microscope model, but it's a symmetry of a low energy plastic field. So this emergent symmetry is a very common phenomena in condensed matter system, because in condensed matter system, for example, there is always lattice that breaks continuous translational symmetry and continuous rotational symmetry. For example, if I have this two-dimensional square lattice, and if I have a particle moving on the, hopping on the lattice, then if I look at single particle energy spectrum in the momentum space, this is the contour plot of energy in the momentum space, the energy spectrum has only this four-fold rotational symmetry because the underlying lattice explicitly breaks the continuous rotational symmetry. However, in the long distance limit, if we look at energy spectrum near k equals zero, then the spectrum looks more isotropic. In the low energy limit, the energy spectrum have the full rotational symmetry. And this is a trivial example where in the free theory, so how rotational symmetry can emerge in the low energy limit. This is an example of emergent space-time symmetry, and also internal symmetry can emerge. And one example is actually in the unit.
Yeah.
The unit of k is 1 over 8, the lattice space. Yeah. And in the second example, internal symmetry can also emerge. So the example is the metal. So we have a lot of electrons in a piece of metal, right? In copper or. And the Hamiltonian that describes the electrons are extremely simple. It's just the kinetic energy and the potential energy caused by periodically placed ions. And there are also electron-electron repulsion because of the Coulomb interaction. But because of this correlation, it's extremely hard to, or almost impossible to solve this problem exactly. And what one usually does is to say, first ignore the correlation, electron-electron correlation, and then solve this single particle problem. Then find the energy spectrum and fill the fermions or electrons below the fermion, below some fermion energy. And then we have some filled fermion surface. This approach is very naive because we completely ignore the electron electron correlation. Nonetheless, this non-interacting picture is amazingly accurate. So, for example, if we look at a specific heat or spin susceptibility as a function of temperature, if we measure, then they are behaving just like non-interacting fermions, although there are strong electron-electron correlation in real materials. So why is non-interacting picture so accurate? This is actually a very non-trivial property, because the typical electron-electron correlation energy is much, much larger than the level spacing between non-interacting energy levels. You know, if the perturbation is stronger than the level spacing, then from the standard perturbation theory, the mixing between different levels is order of one. So we usually don't expect this non-interacting picture to be accurate in this region. You know, in the thermodynamic limit, the level spacing always is always smaller, much, much smaller than the finite interaction energy scale. Actually, the success of this non-interacting picture is thanks to emergence metrics in metal. So what it is? As I mentioned, in the non-interacting system, the fermions or electrons fill the negative energy state. So it fills the all energy below Fermi energy. So these green parts are filled state, and these white parts are empty state. And they are separated by this Fermi surface. And typically, the temperature is much, much smaller than this Fermi energy scale. The Fermi energy is the energy scale of the highest occupied electrons. Therefore, in the low energy, only those particle hole excitations near Fermi surface are important. And if I have two particles, say, at momentum k and k prime, then in the microscopic model, there is a process where those particles exchange momentum and end up in different momentum state. So-called non-forward scattering exists in the microscopic model. Nonetheless, these non-forward scatterings are suppressed in the low energy limit because the available phase space for the final state, which satisfy the energy and momentum conservation, scales like t to the square. Basically, the final state that these two particles can go into is limited to the region near the original momentum state, and the available phase space is order of t square. Therefore, as we go to lower and lower temperature or lower energy, these kind of non-forward scatterings are more and more suppressed. So in the low energy limit, we have this only forward scattering, where they interact, but they don't change their momentum state, essentially. Therefore, with only this forward scattering, the number of particles at each momentum is conserved. And this is not a symmetry of the microscopic model, because the microscopic model, full Hamiltonian, have this off-diagonal or non-forward scattering term, where those particles exchange their momentum. However, the low energy effective theory, we have only this kind of forward scattering term. Therefore, the number of particle or quasi particle at each momentum is conserved near the Fermi surface in the low energy limit. And this is an emergence symmetry, because microscopic model does not have that symmetry. And in the low energy limit, actually, we have infinite number of emergent U1 symmetry associated with the conservation of particle number at each momentum near the Fermi surface. So we can have emergent internal symmetry, and we can have emergent space-time symmetry. And even supersymmetry can emerge in supersymmetry can emerge. You know, yeah, I don't need to update my security program here. So, you know, supersymmetry is a very beautiful theory. It is mathematically the unique extension of the Poincaré symmetry, except for the conformal symmetry, and it has very nice features. Especially, it serves as a very interesting playground to understand strong coupling physics, which is usually hard to do in non-supersymmetry theories. However, in our nature, there's no apparent supersymmetry. And where can you find supersymmetry? So one place to look at is at high energy. If the microscopic model that describes our universe is supersymmetric, then the reason why we don't see supersymmetry in our world could be that the vacuum spontaneously breaks the supersymmetry. And that's why the low energy effective theory of our universe looks like non-supersymmetry. If this is the case, then we have to look at higher energy scale to see the signatures of supersymmetry. The alternative way is to look at the low energy. This is the emergent scenario. Even though the microscopic model explicitly breaks the supersymmetry, system may dynamically organize itself to show supersymmetry in the low energy limit. If this is the case, then as we go to lower and lower energy, supersymmetry will become more and more manifest. I believe that this is a cheaper way to find supersymmetry. And that's why condensed matter system can have supersymmetry. So indeed, there exists an example for this kind of emergent supersymmetry. This is a 2D dilute Ising model. So this sigma can have 0 or plus minus 1. So 0 means that it's vacant site. And plus and minus 1 is just eigenspin. That's why it's called dilute Ising model, because we allow the density of spin fluctuate. And zeta is the user inverse temperature. And mu is the chemical potential that controls the density of the spins. As one tunes the temperature and the chemical potential, one can tune to a critical point where gapless excitations exist. And the critical point is described by a superconformal theory. And this is well known from this work. But in 2D or 1 plus 1 dimensional model, there's no real sharp distinction between bosons and fermions, because we cannot really commute to particles. And one cannot unambiguously determine the statistics of particles. So it will be more interesting to have this kind of emergent supersymmetry at higher dimensions, like 2 plus 1 dimension. But those examples are not common. So I'm going to talk about one such 2 plus 1 dimensional model, which shows emergent supersymmetry. So the model that I'm going to present is composed of three parts, fermionic part and bosonic part, and coupling between the two. So fermions are just free fermions living on a two-dimensional honeycomb lattice. And this just describes hopping from one side to the neighboring side. And they are not interacting. And the density, if the density of the fermion is at half filling, namely if there is one fermion per two sides, if that's the density, then there are two Fermi points. And near the Fermi points, the spectrum of the fermion is linear. So near in the low energy, we have two Dirac fermions. Okay. at these two momentum points. So this is the fermionic part. And bosonic part is like this. Bosons are defined on the dual lattice. So dual of the hexagon lattice is the triangular lattice. So the center of the hexagon form a triangular lattice, and bosons are living on the triangular lattice. And the first term is the usual hopping term or kinetic energy term. Bosons can hop from one side to the other side, neighboring sides. The second term is just the on-site repulsion of bosons. If there are two bosons, then there's energy cost of U. And one important point is the sign of this hopping energy. Usually we have negative sign. Td is negative. If that's negative, then bosons want to condense at k equals zero because this energy is minimized if bosons have all the same phase. And that means that boson condense into k equals zero state. In that case, the low energy boson, we have only one low energy boson near k equals zero. Then there's no chance to realize supersymmetry because supersymmetry requires to have same number of bosons and fermions. And we saw that there are two fermions. And if there is only one boson, then supersymmetry cannot appear. The trick is that if we can make this sign positive, then the phase of the bosons wants to have finite difference between neighboring sides. And actually there exist two minima. In one minima, the phase in one minimum, the phase of the boson rotates in the counterclockwise as I walk around a triangle in the counterclockwise direction. And the other minima, it rotates in the opposite direction. So these are the two degenerate minima. Therefore, in the low energy, there are two low energy bosons defined at each momentum points. And then we have two fermions and we have two low energy bosons. So we may have a chance to realize supersymmetry. What do you mean? Local minima in the momentum space. Yeah, it's local minima.
The Hamiltonian bounded from zero?
Yes. You know, in the lattice model, everything is finite. This is a model for finite degrees freedom. So there's no UV divergence for. New term. So here, Ni is the number of boson, and theta is the phase of the boson. So if density is not zero, then there's a finite energy cost. Yeah. You know, e to the I theta is like creation or annihilation of boson. Yeah, just last part. If they are free, then it's not interesting, right? And then the interaction is basically pairing interaction. Two fermions can annihilate it and become a boson. So in this sense, boson is like a Cooper pair or molecule made of two fermions. And the wave function of two fermions, the bound state of two fermions is the F wave function. Basically, the relative wave function of two fermions changes sign three times as one fermion moves around the other fermion. It's like angular momentum three wave function of two fermions, and boson is composite of those two fermions. So basically, this interaction describes two fermions in the F wave channel become a boson. Right? The two fermions around a hexagon become a boson at the center of the hexagon. That's the interaction between bosons and fermions. So in this sense, these bosons are like Cooper pair or for this fermion. So here's the low energy effective theory. As I mentioned, there are two Dirac fermions and there are two complex fermions. And there is this pairing interaction. Or I think some people might want to call it Yukawa interaction, but in the microscope model is more like pairing infection. And these are all either marginal or relevant operators that are allowed by discrete symmetry of the lattice model. Although, okay.
It's not a frustrated sector.
Sorry?
Or is it a frustrated sector? The bosonic sector, if you put T positive.
T positive, yes.
So when you're registering these two vectors, in fact, it's more complicated than that. It's a frustrated
vector.
Yes, frustration.
Is it frustrated?
Oh, frustrated, yes. That's why there are two minima. If it's unfrustrated, then K0 is the unique minimum. But because it's frustrated, there are more than one minimum.
There are more than two, or you mean two?
There are only two.
Two pair of points.
Yeah, there are only two local minimum.
Two degrees of freedom.
Yeah, that's why we have two complex ones.
But even in that case, you can describe the effective theory in this.
Yes, yes. Because we have two minima in the momentum space. So in the low energy limit, I need to consider only those modes near the minima. And each minima, so fluctuation near each minima is described by one complex boson. So we have two fermions and two bosons, so we can have, in principle, supersymmetry, but this model contains a lot of supersymmetry breaking terms because the microscopic model, we didn't tune any parameters. For example, the mass of the fermion is always zero. This is the masslessness is protected by the exact discrete symmetry of the honeycomb lattice. The time reversal symmetry and the inversion symmetry of the honeycomb lattice make sure that fermions are massless. But scalar boson, mass of the scalar boson is usually not protected, so it's non-zero. And the velocity of the fermion is governed by this Hopping integration of the fermion, but velocity of boson is governed by Hopping of boson, and they are in general different. And then these couplings between bosons are not related to, in general, to the pairing interaction strength, and this breaks for symmetry. And there also exist other coupling that is allowed by microscopic symmetry. The interaction between two different kinds of boson also breaks the supersymmetry. So naively thinking, one would imagine that we have to tune at least four parameters to reach supersymmetric point. However, it turns out that I need to tune only one parameter to realize supersymmetry. For example, if I tune the Hopping strength of the boson, say TD in the microscopic model, then I can tune this mass of the boson to zero. So suppose I tune the system to the critical point and then look at what the RG flow of these other coupling constants are. And here is the RG flow. First, the velocity of fermion and boson converges to each other in the low energy limit. So this is like critical line. The reason why the velocities are more similar in the low energy limit is the mixing between the two sectors. For example, as one boson propagates at one point, it can decay the two fermions, and they can propagate as fermions. And then after a while, it will combine into boson. Therefore, velocity of boson is mixed with the velocity of fermion. That's why they become converged in the low energy limit. Moreover, the other couplings, the pairing interaction or Yukawa coupling, and this interactions between bosons are self-tuned to a point, and at this point, this coupling constant satisfies this supersymmetric relation. And this is a stable fixed point. And actually, at this fixed point, there are four emergence supercharges, and the low energy effective theory for this point is the well-known Vestumina theory in Q+1 dimension. So this is an emergence supersymmetry. So the phase diagram looks like this. So as I tune one parameter of the microscope model, for example, I pressurize the system to tune the Hopping strength of the boson, then I can drive the phase transition from the normal state where there is no pairing to the superconducting state where there's a pairing, and this pairing superpairs are condensed. And both phases, I mean, these two phases are not supersymmetric phase, and the microscope model is not supersymmetric. Nonetheless, the critical point that describes this phase transition is supersymmetric theory, the best luminous theory with four supercharges. And actually, this is also super conformal. So, you know, as usual, there's another four supersymmetry coming from the super conformal algebra. And because of this enlarged symmetry of the theory, one can predict exact value of scaling dimension for some operators. For example, the anomalous dimension of the superconducting order parameter can be predicted exactly. So if you look at the high energy spectrum, it's very non-symmetric. Boson and fermions behave very different way. But as we go to lower and lower energy, or look at the longer and longer distance scale, they look more symmetric. So this is due to self-organization, not due to any microscopic symmetry.
Why was there no parameter in the fermionic?
There's only one relevant coupling, that is what it is. All other parameters, these are all irrelevant around this supersymmetric critical point. So if I tune only one parameter, then rest of the couplings are self-tuned to this critical point. Yeah, so there are some, previously there were some examples where if you keep some discrete set of supersymmetry in the lattice, then that discrete set of supersymmetry become enhanced to continuous full supersymmetry. But in this model, there is no supersymmetry at all in the microscopic model, and it emerges out of nothing. Because of this, it's quite robust. I mean, because this symmetry emerges from this dynamical principle, even though you mess up your microscopic model a little bit, as far as you maintain some symmetry, like time reversal symmetry or inversion symmetry, the supersymmetry is still there. So whatever you do in the high energy spectrum, you cannot mess up in the low energy supersymmetry.
The whole environment with TB.
Yeah.
So when you go to that point, is there something special?
Yeah, but this is, yeah.
Not only the low energy unit.
Yeah, yes, we have to tune one part.
Is there anything special in the lattice theory?
Yeah.
Special value?
One can always tune this kind of parameter experimentally. For example, you can change your pressure of the system, and then you can look at the critical point. Tuning one parameter is not a, big problem.
No, but I think he's saying if I chose that value of the parameter, would I have seen any special symmetries or any?
No, there is no other. There is no special symmetry.
Okay.
Yeah, except for conformal symmetry that is always there in Messier state. Yeah.
Could you give an example of how you might kind of fiddle with the high energy spectrum? You know, something you change and still. You said it's very robust, so that if you.
Yeah, so what it is that, look, for example, the velocity of the boson and fermion is very different at high energy. So if you look at the same momentum, the energy of boson and fermions are very different. But as you go to lower and lower energy, the velocity become more identical, and the energy of boson and fermion become more similar to each other. And in the low energy limit, they become identical. So if you can do some measurements, say measure the velocity of boson and fermion, you will see very different velocity for boson and fermion for high velocity, right? But for slow moving particles, boson and fermion, then you will see very similar velocity.
Very big lattice, and I maybe like sprinkle it with defects or something like that. Is it still robust against those kinds of changes?
Maybe not. Defect breaks the translation symmetry, but this is the translation symmetry. Therefore, there could be other terms that out loud. I'm not sure, but my impression is that it's not.
Broke the timer or something that forbade the mass for the fermions.
Yeah, that would be bad.
For the so then you have the two parameter thing.
Yeah. So generically, if we have more supersymmetry breaking terms allowed by discrete symmetry, then this critical point will become multi-critical point.
What's this? It's just like it would be a special point in the plane rather than a point in the plane.
Yeah, so depending on what perturbation you have.
Yeah. Have an attraction towards a supersymmetric point? Yes, it is attractive or it would be repulsive.
So, you know, yeah. The full picture is like this. We have infinite dimensional space of parameters, right? All allowed parameters. And then if you have certain microscopic symmetry, like time reversal and then inversion symmetry, etc., then we are allowed to scan only one subspace in the parameter space, right? So in that subspace, this critical point may be stable in this direction. But in general space of parameter, there can be many repulsive direction as well. Right? So depending on how many relevant couplings you add by changing your microscopic model, the multi-criticality of the theory will change. Then it will be, you need to two parameters.
But is it, in that case, do I get
still you do have
still a fraction.
In this plane.
But now there's in the plane, that plane is now the mass and the T over U thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, this plane has lambda and H, etc., right? And then there are two repulsive direction, mass of the fermion and mass of the boson. Then you need to tune two parameters to reach this critical point. But in this specific microscopic model, this direction is not allowed. This perturbation is not allowed by this vicinity. Yeah.
I guess the thing is, how magic is it? So supposing I can always get to a critical point by adjusting those two things. How magic is it that there was supersymmetry at that point?
Because we know that if NF is zero, we have this supersymmetry. So it's just a matter of whether you tune the mass of fermion by your hand, or?
Tune
on
the hand, so yeah. I know what you're doing. And I think it's very plausible that you get a critical point at some point. But is there a criterion for knowing when this there will be a supersymmetry that emerges in addition to the conformal symmetry at some point?
You mean more general principle?
When you expect to? Without having to sort through every model, whether you're going to have this thing happen.
How do I know? So we know what happens in the space of NF equal to zero, right? We know what happens, what the flow is like in this plane, right? And we know this NF direction is the relevant direction, so it flows away from this direction, right? But as far as I tune this NF by hand, I can remain on the surface. Then the flow will obey this flow.
Something different. If supposedly tomorrow someone comes into the room and says, here's a model which I've arranged to have the same number of bosons and fermions, I have some repulsive directions, some in some flow directions. Should I expect it to be relatively generic that in that system the critical point will be supersymmetric?
Oh, more general model. Yeah, I don't know precisely, but I expect the first necessity is that you need strong interaction between boson and fermion. You need strong mixing between the two. That's the necessary condition. Without it, you cannot have this kind of emergence opportunity. Because you need dynamical tuning. The fermion and boson need to mix with each other. Right? But I don't know whether that's a sufficient condition or not. For this model, it turns out to be sufficient. But for more general model, I don't know.
So where did you make the analysis?
Yeah, for example, the self-tuning of the velocity, this guy, relies on the fact that the coupling between boson and fermion is strong. So there must be non-trivial coupling, non-trivial process where boson decays into two fermions and recombine into boson. So the fixed point should be interacting theory. It cannot be a free theory. If it is a free theory, then in the low energy limit, they are decoupled. So they will flow for a while, but they will stop flowing if the low energy theory were free theory. But this is an interesting theory. This pairing coupling is non-zero in the fixed point. That's why they keep interacting with each other in the low energy limit. And yeah, so this specific calculation is done in 4 minus epsilon dimension. So if epsilon is small, then this is perturbatively small. But yeah, the point is that one can generalize this, the regularization scheme preserve the supersymmetry. So one can have a supersymmetry in 3 dimension and 4 dimension and in between. Okay, so this is the first part. So now I switch gear to discuss the second topic. And this is about, so the previous theory, this critical point is described by relativistic quantum field theory, actually super conformal theory. It has the largest symmetry that a quantum field theory can have in some sense. But in the next example, I am interested in strongly interacting phase of non-relativistic particles, especially fermions at a finite density. So before discussing about strongly interacting fermions, let me review what we know about weakly interacting fermions. First, if there is no interaction at all between fermion and its Fermi gas, and it's a free theory, so quasi particle is well defined for every for all momentum. And then, as I said, there is a Fermi surface that divides the occupied state and the unoccupied state, and there is a singularity in the occupation number. So Fermi surface defined by the momentum point, which shows some kind of singularity in the occupation number, for example, and gapless mode exists only on the Fermi surface. It's easy in the Fermi gas. If I turn on some short range interaction for this fermion, then it becomes Fermi liquid. And because of this interaction, the quasi particles acquire a finite lifetime. But as I discussed in the previous examples of emergent internal symmetry in metals, as we go near the Fermi surface, the lifetimes get longer and longer because these non-forward scatterings are more and more suppressed in the low energy. Therefore, even though there is no quasi particle in general momentum, quasi particles are well defined near the Fermi surface. And we can still, because of that, there is a singularity on those momentum points in the Fermi surface. And again, gapless modes are defined only on the Fermi surface. That's for Fermi system with short range interaction. If there is a long range interaction, suppose I have some massless boson, like gauge field or some critical boson, and then these fermions interact with each other at long distance, and there is non forward scattering that is not suppressed by this phase space argument. Therefore, there is no quasi particle anymore. So it's called non Fermi liquid. Still, even though there's no quasi particle, there is still a singularity in some momentum points. And from that, we can define a Fermi surface sharply. And I will talk more about what it is more specifically. And then again, the gapless points are defined near the Fermi point. And the bottom line is that if the Fermi energy, the energy of the highest occupied state, is much greater than the interaction strength, whether it's long range interaction or short range interaction, then since this is the largest energy scale, depthless excitation can exist only near the Fermi surface, because the fermions that are deep inside the Fermi surface has too large kinetic barrier, so it cannot participate in the low energy process. It cannot scatter outside the Fermi surface. And in this sense, those fermions inside the Fermi surface are inert. They don't contribute to the low energy processes. So these are what I call weakly or non-weakly interacting fermion system. And by weakly interacting, I mean the interaction energy is smaller than this Fermi energy. And my question is, what happens if interaction between fermions are much strong or comparable or stronger than this Fermi energy? And we know that if this is the case, then a spontaneous symmetric breaking may occur. For example, these fermions can, the Fermi surface become unstable, and particle hole condensation or particle condensation may occur and gap out the Fermi surface. That's common, like superconductivity or some kind of magnetic ordering or charge density wave. Those kind of things are the first scenario. In the second scenario, there can be more exotic insulating state, which does not break any symmetry. And there are many active research on this area, but it's still insulating. Namely, there is no gapless mode that carries the same charge as the original formula. So it's natural that if interaction is very strong, then the motion of this fermion is hindered by this strong interaction. So they are localized and it's insulated. However, is this the end of the list for the strong coupled fermions? So question is there a possible gapless phase, new phase of strongly interacting fermions at a finite density? If there exists such gapless phase, then it's natural to expect that the gapless mode may not be localized near the Fermi surface anymore, because the interaction strength is comparable or larger than the Fermi energy. So even the fermions inside the Fermi surface may contribute to low energy theory. Then what is the low energy structure for such theory? So I would like to address this question by using ADS-CFT. So we know that the gravitational theory in d-dimensional anti-distance space is dual to some conformal field theory in the boundary. But this is for relativistic theory. So in order to study non-relativistic field theory, we have to break this Lorentz symmetry. And one way of doing it is to consider a background which breaks the Lorentz symmetry spontaneously, starting from this duality. So, for example, I can consider some Lorentz symmetry breaking background and consider gravitational theory on that background. And then that theory will correspond to some non-relativistic theory in the boundary. So here is the gravitational theory that I considered. So I have metric field living on 3+1 dimensional space and time in negative cosmological constant. And I consider the U1 gauge field. So this U1 gauge field is important to have Lorentz symmetry breaking background. And I consider a fermion field of 4-component Dirac fermions. And this is to prove fermionic Dirac freedom in the boundary field. And it is minimally coupled with the U1 gauge field and the metric. And this is a phenomenological model. It's not a theory that is derived from full string theory, but so the mass of the fermion is some three parameters that I can choose. And this theory is known to have a stable charge black hole solution where so this solution has basically two parameters, alpha and q. Alpha is basically the charge of the black hole or black brain, and q determines the temperature of the black hole. And these are the three parameters, and it is known that the solution is stable. And then there is a 2 plus 1 dimensional flat space parameterized by Txy, and then z is the perpendicular direction. And in this coordinate choice, the horizon of the black hole is at z equal 1, and asymptotic ADS space is near z equal 0. So my boundary field theory is living here, and this is the bulk where gravitation theory is defined. Here, the temporal component of gauge field is non-zero, so this breaks the Lorentz symmetry, right? Because gauge field is vector boson, so if I have only temporal component, Lorentz symmetry is broken. In particular, the value of this gauge potential near the boundary determines the chemical potential of the boundary field theory. So by having finite chemical potential, I am looking at a theory where there are finite number of particles on the boundary. It's like
the low energy limit for that.
It's going to
look like the one you started with.
Right, yeah, the low
energy spectrum. Anyway, so just to give a sense, is that how long shot is that? Is that are there other things that I could have entertained as being an alternative theory, or is this kind of a.
What's the perspective to embed this theory in first?
Well, I'm just trying to play. So you made a choice there, and I don't have a sense as to how much you curtailed my options.
Yeah, actually, I don't know. Maybe somebody else is better than me in answering that question.
Embedded in string theory. What are you addressing there? I think the problem in matter is some matter things you can ask. Well, I don't know
if I can
say that there's more than one way.
If you try to get a non-optimistic CFT, yeah. There are several potential properties of different depth. You could do this, you could do the massive vector field, you could do a three forms of topological coupling. Because some of those might be equivalent and they might fall into the yielding difference of matter and degrees of freedom variance and stuff.
So logic now is to explore the options to see.
Yeah. For example, I know in the M theory, if we compactify the 11 dimensional space into S7 plus ADS4, then there are this kind of fermion with some special mass. And there are some power of massive fermions. But so we know that this is part of those theories, but we don't know whether this is self-consistent or not. Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you've got Einstein gravity, you've got a negative cosmological constant, and you've got then the gauge field.
Yeah.
And so the gauge field is going to be dual to some current, and you've turned on a chemical potential.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's breaking Lorentz symmetry, right. But at some level, you would think that the vacuum of the theory, where the chemical potential is zero, I would have just associated that with ADS space.
So that's so why at high energy it looks like ADS, because we start from high energy theory, which respect the full Lorentz symmetry, right? And then I spontaneously break that Lorentz symmetry, so in the low energy, near horizon, that breaking is clear. But as we go to higher and higher energy, it looks like ADS space, right? Which respects the full Lorentz symmetry.
Distances relatively still.
Because I start from
the gravity is clear. So
yeah.
I'm trying to model some system of interaction fermions.
Yeah, so for system of interacting formulas, it does not matter whether the high energy theory is relative to or not. It's like this. If you have finite density, suppose my chemical potential is finite like this, then whether I start from the this dispersion or this dispersion does not matter much for the low energy effective theory.
If you turn the chemical potential off, this one sounds like you're expecting it to be one of these ones where you have a relative.
Yeah, I'm looking at this kind of situation. Yeah.
So the point is, though, that you want to you're choosing a state where Lorentz symmetry is broken,
right,
or an ensemble where Lorentz symmetry is broken.
Yeah.
And you just want to look at the physics there.
Yeah, but for low-energy formulas, they don't know whether the Lorentz symmetry is explicitly broken or spontaneously broken. That's the point, I guess.
If you're up at the Fermi surface, you don't.
Yeah,
you don't know
where near the Fermi surface, they don't know what happens deep inside the Fermi surface. The spectrum is linear near the Fermi surface always. Okay, so
I would have thought I could redefine my p, x, and y to really sort that out. Is that? But I would have thought that's.
We define T, X, Y.
So I can rescale T, X, and Y to reabsorb that alpha, at least in the metric, right?
Oh, this part.
Yeah. So is that anything but pure gauge, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But still, there is none. So, yeah, the goal here is to prove the dynamics of the formulaic field in the boundary theory that is pure to this bulk formula. So I want to calculate specifically spectral function of those formulaic operators in the boundary field. And since there is this translation symmetry in the 2 plus 1 dimensional space, I can choose this plane wave along that 2 plus 1 dimensional space and leave some non-trivial dependence along the perpendicular direction. The equation of motion for this spinner is like this. And I have chosen a special case with zero mass. I think this is not an absolute necessity, but this is convenient because if mass is zero, then left chiral mode and right chiral modes are decoupled, so I can focus only on two component mode. So instead of solving four component differential equation, I can solve only two component differential equation, which is easier. So, what is the boundary condition? So, near horizon, so there are two complex initial conditions that need to be fixed. So, one component is fixed by imposing this ingoing boundary condition near horizon. So, the wave move toward the black hole and does not come out to make sure causality. And the other is fixed by imposing my boundary data near the ADS space. So for example, I impose eta. Eta is my choice, my boundary data. The second component of the spinner, then from this ingoing boundary condition, the first component is uniquely determined. But there's another way of choosing the boundary condition. I could have imposed my boundary data on the first component, and then second component will be determined from the ingoing boundary condition. But it turns out that those two choices are equivalent, and they give the same spectral function. And then from the ADCFT, one can calculate the Green's function or propagator from the own share action of the gravitational theory. And one subtle thing is that for fermion, it has only one derivative with respect to time and space. Therefore, the own share action vanishes for fermion acceptor. So in order to have any non-trivial dependence of the action on my boundary data, I need to include this surface term, which is defined near the ADS boundary. And then from this boundary term, the Green's function can be expressed as a function of this P and Q, which is defined. What boundary condition? Just like this time. This is nothing to do with the boundary condition. This
so
is,
how do you define this?
Yeah, so this respects the Wall symmetry, and it does not modify the equation's motion in the ball. But I think, so this is a phenomenological model. So I didn't derive this boundary term. But if you consider full string theory, yeah, if you have full string theory, then you will have this. So this is the, and then from the Green's function, I calculate the spectral function, which is essentially the imaginary part of the Green's function. And the physical meaning of spectral function as a function of omega and k is that how much spectral weight a particle of momentum k have at energy omega. And this is the result of the spectral function as a function of energy and momentum. So if I fix one momentum and look at the spectral function as a function of energy, then I have a broad peak. So this light area represents high spectral weight, and this dark area represents low spectral weight. So for a fixed momentum, I have a broad peak. So there is no delta function peak, which implies that this is a non-formulated state. There is no well-defined quasi-particle. Namely, for a given momentum, energy is not sharply defined. The lifetime of particle is very short in some sense. And then another point is that this peak is centered at negative energy. So here, chemical potential is at zero. The fact that the peak is centered at negative energy implies that the density is non-zero, finite. So negative side is occupied state, and positive side is unoccupied state. So the fact that spectrum is asymmetric between below the Fermi surface and above the Fermi surface, it's like we have finite chemical potential like this. If chemical potential was zero, then the spectrum will be symmetric above and below. But here we have finite density. And this, and most interesting point is that for small momentum, there is this sharp peak as a function of frequency at localized at omega equals zero. So if I plot the spectral function for this small momentum as a function of frequency, I have this picture. So this is momentum smallest, I mean, momentum 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. So everything is measured in the unit of the curvature radius of the AD space. And there is a singular peak at zero energy. And the singularity decreases as momentum increases. And at some point, the singular peak vanishes. And this is sharply at omega equals zero. So there is a low energy state for all momentum below certain critical momentum. So by the way, since there is a rotational symmetry in the two plus one dimensional space, this momentum is just a magnitude of momentum. So the spectral function is independent of the direction. So this means that all momentum points inside certain critical momentum have this low energy life. So they contribute to the low energy process. And this is very unusual feature compared to the weakly interacting many body fermion system. So let us compare how is it different from other case. So this is what spectral function look like in Fermi gas non-interacting fermions. In the non-interacting fermion, the quasi particles are well defined at every momentum. So as a function of frequency, there's a delta function p. And as momentum changes, this position of the delta function p disperses. And at Fermi energy, it close to zero energy. In Fermi liquid, if we have short range interaction, then quasi particle have finite lifetime. That's why it is burdened. But as we approach the Fermi surface, the lifetime gets longer and longer. The width becomes smaller and smaller. And right at the Fermi surface, there's still delta function peak. So this is Fermi liquid. In weakly interacting non-Fermi liquid, if there are some critical bosons and weakly interacting with fermions, then this delta function peak disappears. But still, there is some algebraic singularity at right at the Fermi energy. That's why the Fermi energy can be still well defined, even though there is no quasi particle. But the point is that there is no such low energy excitation for other momentum. So there are low energy excitations only at the Fermi surface. Here, in the strongly interacting non-Fermi liquid phase that I just mentioned, low energy excitation, oh, I drew in the wrong way. This peak should be on the Fermi energy right at the numerical zero. Sorry. Yeah, we should look at this picture. So for the low energy excitation, the gapless excitations are defined at all momentum below this Fermi surface. So in the low energy, we have critical Fermi ball instead of Fermi surface. So all momentum points inside this ball are critical, and they are important at low energy. So low energy effective theory, whatever it is, it should include all those excitations inside this Fermi ball. And they are critical in the sense that they are massless. And I think the basic reason is that we are considering the strong coupling limit where the interaction strength is large compared to the Fermi energy. Therefore, those fermions are no longer constrained by the kinetic energy barrier. So even those fermions deep inside the Fermi surface can get excited outside the Fermi surface and can participate in the low energy physics.
From starting from gravity. Right?
Yes.
So we have a statistical model that has the same behavior?
No. I won't have one.
You won't have one?
Yeah. That would be very interesting. So, in summary, oh, and if we turn on finite temperature, then this singular peak got smoothed out, and there's no singularity as a user in Fermi liquid world. So,
not the chemical potential, what happens?
At zero chemical potential?
Yeah.
There's only one gapless mode at k equals zero.
Does that happen because it is, these peaks collapse?
Yes, yeah, this Fermi ball collapse into one point. Like this, if you tune the chemical potential down, then we hit this point, the original point. As a user.
But whatever those things are, if you ask kind of, is there kind of a quasi particle description for the weakly interacting things, you know that you don't have what it sounds like in the sense of.
Yeah, I think we don't have those.
We can infer it can't exist at some level.
Yeah, I think we don't have such things. So, in some sense, it's a very strange object, you know. In deep space dimensional theory, in weakly interacting system, the gapless modes are defined on d minus one dimensional Fermi surface. If I have two dimensional fermion, Fermi surface are one dimensional line. But here, the massless modes are defined on two dimensional manifold in the momentum space. It behaves like three dimensional fermion in some sense. It's like a dimensional lift. Maybe that's because the group change theory is defined in 3+1 dimensional. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting point to think about further. And yeah, in summary, I discussed about a lattice model where the critical point is described by emergence personality theory. And because of that, one could understand quantitatively the critical phenomena. And question is there a real system that is described by those lattice models? And in the second part, I discussed a gravitational theory which might describe a non-relativistic strongly interacting many-body fermion system. And in this case, because the interaction strength is larger than any other energy scale, at finite density, very new structure emerges, which is the critical Fermi ball. So all momentum points inside some ball are important in the low energy process. So I expect the low energy effective theory should be very, very different from the weakening interacting Fermi. So there are many questions. Are they stable? Or are they unstable towards some condensation? For example, Fermi liquid we know is always unstable to pairing superconducting state at low enough temperature. So how about in Fermi ball? And what is the thermodynamic and transport properties, etc. Okay, thank you for your attention.
For emergence force symmetry, I don't know whether it is impossible, but I guess it's more difficult because the coupling constant, the Yukawa coupling fundamentals are marginal in 3+1d, while it is relevant in 2+1d near the Gaussian fixed point. Therefore, in 2+1d, it always flows to the strong coupling limit. So the stronger the coupling, easier to realize personality because strong coupling is more mixing between both of them. But in 3+1d, it will be more difficult. But I think it's not completely impossible. For the second part, I think this feature, for example, this critical forming wall does not particularly depend on this 2+1d feature. What is important is the fact that the interaction strength is large compared to the form energy. That's my guess.
In your description, is there any understanding that the theory that would describe this family board has any chance to be a local theory? Or I mean, when you come from a gravity dual, you get some theorems, actually, but one of the arguments this should be a local
I don't know. So gravitational description is local, yeah. Right? So does that imply the corresponding field theory is local? Is that that's your question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Does anybody know the answer?
But your fairly liquid description wouldn't be local either, right? That's your fairly liquid description would not be local either.
That's local. Fermi liquid is local in real space. In real space.
Yeah. I guess if you do, I mean, if you have an action in the ball that has a well-defined variational principle, you can do the holographic renormalization. Then you can look at correlation functions of operators and see if they have the expected feature.
In the general case, when it couples, the usual argument is if it couples to a general metric on the time, then in some sense it's a local field. But if you go to this system, then this usual argument goes away.
And you go to which?
There is now your own.
Yeah, I think it is local in the sense that if you have this time, and this is ADS, this is boundary, and in order for these 2 points to develop any correlation, that you need finite time for this mode to propagate in the ball and affect the other points. In this sense, I think theory is likely to be local.
Um,
And you were talking before about bosons basically being the dual to the spexical lattices, or the being on these triangular sites in the first theory. Is there a physical system in which you can get these types of bosons?
Yeah, so that's an open question. And interesting point here is that these bosons don't need to be a microscopic type. You can start from pure fermion emergence. And this boson can emerge as a composite particle. It's like Cooper pair. You start from pure electron system, but in the low energy, you have this Cooper pair. You can have this boson in that way.
Yeah, and this is a spin with boson, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would take, say, a lattice of these
only fermions,
and leave the others to form supersymmetry with those bosons that condense.
Yeah. So the message is that you can have only fermions, the microscopic motion. Even then, you can have supersymmetry because boson can emerge at low energy as a composite particle.
That's
natural because Cooper pair, so if you have two fermions on a hexagon, and they are like circling around a hexagon, they form a bound state. Therefore, I can define my boson to be sitting on at the center of hexagon.
Any other questions?
Thank you, speaker again.